Radhika Jones, editor-in-chief of Vanity Fair. If you enjoy binge-watching the best TV shows and love hearing from the actors and showrunners who make them happen, then subscribe to Vanity Fair. Our Hollywood reporters take you behind the scenes of the year's most anticipated projects, the industry's biggest moves, and the hardest-fought awards races. From The Crown to The Real Housewives, we've got the inside scoop. As a special thank you to our still-watching audience, we're offering 15% off a yearly digital subscription to Vanity Fair. Visit vanityfair.com today and use promo code POD15. That's vanityfair.com, promo code POD15, for 15% off a yearly digital subscription to everything you want.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Hello, and welcome to Still Watching, a weekly television podcast from Vanity Fair. I'm Chris Murphy.
I'm Hillary Busis. This week, we are taking a detour into an area that Chris knows very well and I know not as well, which is The Real Housewives of Bravo.
Yeah, Hillary, you are right. I am a super fan of the franchise. And I guess while it's usually all fun and games, you know, it's throwing drinks as well as shade, new reporting from Vanity Fair reveals that there is a dark underbelly to The Real Housewives franchise.
I am shocked to hear this.
Are you?
No, but really, this story that we published on VanityFair.com, it has a lot of really disturbing allegations and a lot of details about, you know, from crew and from housewives themselves about things that happened while making the show and deep in the fabric of the franchise and how it's produced.
Yeah. Specifically, mental health struggles and alcohol abuse and accusations of racism. There's also talk of unionizing at Bravo and an idea that's been spearheaded by one of the franchise's biggest names and former stars, Bethany Frankel.
Vanity Fair contributor Anna Peel has been investigating the show, and she published them in her big bombshell story, which is called A House Divided, and is available on VF.com. She's also here to speak with us. Welcome, Anna.
Yes, welcome. Welcome to the pod, Anna.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, so I feel like I have to make a confession, which is that I know of The Housewives kind of ambiently, but I am not a viewer, like, with any regularity. But Chris, you're an expert.
I would say I'm a super fan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Of the highest degree.
So Chris, reading this story, what is your reaction and like, what are you dying to know about, I guess?
Well, really, it's so interesting because you have all these anecdotes that I've seen play out in the news and on the various seasons. You know, with Roni, we've got, you know, Ebony Williams.
That stands for The Real Housewives of
yes,
New York.
I'm already getting too inside baseball. I'm so sorry. Real Housewives of New York. We see Ebony Williams versus Ramona Singer. We see Leah and her sobriety journey. We see Jill Zarin and Bethany Frankel sort of, you know, coming back together and reconciling. And you have all of these anecdotes. And we're getting sort of what we didn't see on TV. So I'd love to know, how did you go about this reporting process? It feels like it must have been so hard to do.
Wait, before you talk about that first, I want to know, but like, I'm also curious about the reporting process, but what I want to know first is like, why is like this the moment that like you felt like this story first, like that you wanted to start reporting it in the first place? Like what is the state of Housewives? Like, why is it at a tipping point?
Well, I had written about the racial reckoning on Roni, and I felt like things had changed a lot, but it obviously hadn't changed enough. And it was a very painful process, especially for the people of color who were put in the position of like integrating the cast and then having to explain to all these white people like what was going on.
What is racism? It was really crazy to watch in real time. Yeah.
It was crazy. And I think that it did I think it was really, really hard for those people, or at least the people I spoke with said that it was hard for them. And then so I was thinking about how drinking had changed on the show. And there were so many more people who were getting sober. There was Lala. Mm-hmm. Carl Radke from Summer House became sober. Sorry, Lala's from Vanderpump Rules.
Vanderpump Rules I have seen. Oh. Weirdly. Yeah, no, this is too much information. I watched Vanderpump Rules when I was pumping for my daughter. So because it was like an inside – it was just an inside joke that I had with myself.
It's a good one. It's funny.
Anyway, so yeah, so the Bravoverse is vast and interconnected and various people – guests on different people's shows. I mean, you describe it as a cinematic universe, which feels like – yeah, an apt description. But yeah, so you kind of felt like there was something happening at Bravo, like network-wide things were changing, not just on the Housewives shows.
Exactly. It felt like we still had this fun social drinking culture, like certainly on Watch What Happens Live, Andy Cohen's nightly talk show. But then it was still a part of the shows where people were having fun, they were having parties, and they were having these iconic, memeable moments. Mm-hmm. But then they were existing at the same time as people going through sober journeys. Mm-hmm. And so I was interested in how that was being handled internally, and then also how production was checking in with cast members who might wind up needing to go on a sober journey, and like where those checks and balances were. So I initially thought about it from that perspective. And then what I thought was going on, which was that basically that there were a bunch of people who were being managed and kept safe, but they were doing kind of what they wanted. They're adults. They always say, we don't, you know, they're adults. They make their own choices. It wasn't that kind of environment. And it wasn't as always supportive as I assumed it would be. And there weren't always grown-ups in the room saying enough is enough. And, you know, I just learned more and more and more.
As viewers of the show, do you guys feel like, in as much as more cast members have gotten sober or are like trying to drink less, like has that had an effect on the show? Like do you understand kind of the other side of it, which is like we want these women to be drinking because they're more entertaining when they are, which kind of seems to be the network's like point
that
of view.
That seems to be a lot of the audience point of view too. Yeah. A lot of these shows, I mean, I think Roni, Real Housewives of New York, is a good example of all of these franchises have ebbs and flows and peaks and valleys, and they're not always all, you know, firing on all cylinders or super entertaining all the time. And it is a sort of maybe problematic to say, but a lot of the funniest and like most iconic moments happen when Sonia Morgan is drinking a lot and slips and falls or something, things that are obviously alcohol contributes to the absurdity and sort of the stakes of the moment. So you do see people online, especially on Twitter and Instagram, complaining that, oh, wow, people stop drinking and the show gets boring. But we don't really ever talk about what the toll that drinking has on these women as, you know, stars of these shows.
And in reporting this, you know, I saw it all in real time, and I saw Leah McSweeney throwing the tiki torch, and it was so iconic and it was so fun. And, you know, Leah in Rhode Island, Hurricane Leah.
I'm going stir crazy. There's just only so much talking about yachts and D-Class A that I can really handle before I'm like, this is how I have fun. Oh my God, I hate these tiki torches. They suck!
Why?
Because they suck. They just represent bullshit.
Why? They represent like a fun party.
No, they don't, honey. You don't read the news.
Fun party.
But then when I was watching it again with this context of what was going on behind the scenes,
this is
really, really tough.
In terms of talking, like how many women did you talk to? Like, can you get into any of that, or is it you sort of?
I talked to current and former housewives. I talked to producers. I talked to people who work with housewives and other Bravo cast members. Oh my gosh, I can't even tell you how many interviews I've done over the last months, but many, many conversations with many, many people.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's wild too that, like, what struck me most was at the very beginning of the story, you talked to a housewife who is anonymous because she's still involved in the show, and she basically says, like, yeah, this sucks. I hate doing this, but what else am I gonna do? Which is just like, it's not even Stockholm syndrome because she's acknowledging how miserable, like what
she's aware,
like what miserable, like how miserable of an experience it is to be on this show, to like all the sacrifices that you have to make. But yeah, like they keep doing it, and they're doing it willingly. Like that's the wildest part of the story to me.
It's just so hard to walk away, you know, once you have that kind of attention and some of it's adoration and some of it's very unkind things. Yeah. But it's like I just don't know how you go from being in the sun like that to, you know, not. And I think it's really hard for a lot of them. And you can see someone like Jill Zarin.
Did she leave the show of her, like, her own volition or no?
No. Okay. She was not asked back. And she sort of, her time in the sun was so good. It was so entertaining. It was so
great. Is it public why they fired her? Or just didn't renew her contract or whatever, however you phrase it?
They sort of went with Bethany over Jill. They were feuding their relationship. They were best friends.
Don't you want to have them both on the show if they're feuding?
One thing that isn't a thing of why you definitely get kicked off the show is red lines. It's like, it's not like, okay, this behavior is always banned. Mm-hmm. It's a case-by-case basis.
Mm-hmm. If they like you enough, they'll let stuff slide.
100%.
Exactly. Yeah. It can be violence. It can be
racism.
Yeah. It can be other kinds of bad behavior.
God, I think I loved the ending of your piece because I think with my friends, right, we sort of think of Bravo and Real Housewives as sort of like our sports, right? We've got our favorite teams, our favorite players, you know, their stats, their literal seasons of like who's playing, who's first string, who's second string for each season.
I feel like Fantasy Housewives is like there's a separate part of the franchise now too, right? Where they take people from different.
Totally. Yeah. That's Ultimate Girls Trip, where they put the best, you know, the top players and, you know, and all in one sort of in one environment. And I think there's such an interesting parallel to go back to Hillary's point about why do they keep coming back, where it's like we watch, you know, people watch football and these sports that are, you know, bloodthirsty and bad for you physically. And yet, like the glory that you get and the sunshine and the admiration and the love from the masses, it keeps people coming back. It seems like that's sort of a big part of the Housewives. And it's hard, again, I think we're reaching a question like, can we ethically consume this anymore?
Yeah.
But it's, I thought that parallel was so interesting because, you know, we don't really bat an eye when, you know, football players boom, hit each other and somebody gets knocked out. But how different is that from then seeing, you know, Leah McSweeney, you know, relapse?
Me and alcohol have a very weird relationship. I didn't drink for 9 years and I started again maybe 6 months ago. But I am someone who actually enjoys like completely like going crazy. The other night I went out and drank way too much, lost my Chanel bag and my passport. So I'm putting it back on pause for a little bit.
I do think that the pressure to be entertaining and to be told like, turn it up, like, to party, you know, and be interesting, like, did contribute to perhaps how much she was drinking. And certainly to be on Ultimate Girls Trip and, you know, they say, oh, like, we support people's sobriety. Like, we always make sure that there are non-alcoholic beverages. But then if cast members say to a sober castmate,
I wish you were drinking.
That part also really stood out.
And also, I don't know if you watched the new Roni reboot.
Oh, of course I did.
Of course. But Jenna Lyons took a sip of alcohol
at the end of the reunion, right?
So they do make a big deal of saying, you know, like, we make sure that there are, you know, different colored whatever to designate which ones are alcoholic and which ones are not. And that could be a really big deal for someone who's sober to have taken a sip of alcohol. I don't know what it was like for Jenna, but yeah, that's huge. But going back to the glow, I feel like sometimes that they stay because they have a bad season or they've put so much money into a business and you kind of have to make it all worth it. It's like, I went through all of this. Like, I have to get something out of this. I have to win.
Well, that's so interesting because, I mean, a big part of the story is arguably the woman who won Housewives more than any single person in the world, Bethany Frankel, who has become, a Shark Tank-level successful businesswoman, but clearly has a lot of complicated relationships with Roni and sort of what birthed her. And
she seems sort of like a Frankenstein figure in the article, which, like, she feels partially responsible for, like, what the Housewives became and is now like, what have I helped to create?
Yeah, because she was like, oh, it's like, if you go on this, you could be Bethany. You could sell a company for $100 million. And that's actually not going to happen. That didn't happen to like anyone else, really.
So well, I was under the impression that everybody's side businesses are like jokes on the show. Like
a lot of them are. Some of them are, but a lot of them are. And I say this as someone who, like, I loved Roni. Especially like that era of Roni. I always said I am a Sonia Sun, a Bethany Moon, and a Tinsley Rising. So it's like I really do really have a lot of love for Bethany, but especially in recent years, she's sort of really sort of on TikTok.
These are the 10 terms that I propose, subject to modification. I did not buy the idiot guide to starting a union in 24 hours, but these are fair. These are ways that talent can understand compensation without having to try to audit a multi-billion dollar powerful company that hides money in different places and likes to try to pretend that everything equals a show expense so you never get any of the gross.
She's sort of gone a little bit off the rails in terms of her relationship with the show. So I guess what I'm asking is how much can we take what she says as truth, just given how much she gained from the show and how quickly she sort of turned on the thing that sort of birthed her?
Well, I'm not in her head, but I think that she says it's her penance, right? Mm-hmm. Like what she's doing now. Because a lot of what made her Bethany was doing it on the backs of other people, right? She says it's kill or be killed. Mm-hmm. So it's like if you're on top, that means someone's on the bottom. But I think grappling with that and seeing how it was impacting people made an impression on her. And people can question why she's doing whatever she's doing. But if, like, there are not rights for these people in the same way that there are for other people who work in entertainment. Mm-hmm. And so if she's working to make things better, it's, like, great.
And, I mean, I guess we should say it's a reality TV-wide problem. It's not, just that the Housewives are ununionized, but there are so many fewer, like, labor practice, like, standards for reality than as there are for scripted TV.
Yeah, and it's sort of at the discretion of the production companies or networks what the rules are and how they're enforced. There are very, very few reality shows where there is the same cast over many seasons. And, you know, people get switched in and out. But, like, most places are one and done. It's like, you know, there's an inherent disposability to a Bachelor contestant because they're only going to be on for one season. And I thought because they have these years-long relationship with people that everybody had to at least be taken care of to the extent that they could survive in this world. And not everybody does. And I don't know what it's like at every production company. So I can't speak to everybody's practices.
Yeah. So I'm talking a little bit about other reality shows. You wrote another long story for VF about Love Island, a very different show in a different country. I mean, I guess there's an American version, but nobody really cares about that one. Sorry. But I'm curious, as you were reporting these two stories, did you see similarities in the ways in which they're made, like in the problems that they both have or had?
Well, obviously, fame complicates everything. Yeah. but with Love Island, it's made so differently, which is like you go into a villa. You're there for, you know, whatever it is, like 6 weeks. I think now it's like 8 weeks. Mm-hmm. And then there's no external communication. So you except for like a few challenges where you kind of like hear what people are saying about you. But you have no idea what's going on. You're totally sheltered. Mm-hmm. You're obviously aware that you're on TV. Mm-hmm.
But then, is it like you're isolated? You can't like read a book or like...
You don't have your phone.
Yeah.
You can't do anything. Yeah. It's like you're just stuck with these people in this house. And then you leave and you're one of the most famous people in the UK. Mm-hmm. And like, what is that level of fame so quickly do to a person? Mm-hmm. And I think that that's really hard. But Bravo, I think, is a little different. I think that the challenges people face on Bravo are trying to be liked by the fans, trying to be liked by Andy, trying to get a good edit, trying to, you know, and trying to be a good sport when they're teased, which is sort of the format of Watch What Happens Live. You know, they're answering polls about like stuff that they've done wrong and, you know, which Real Housewife of New Jersey has the best bad nose job.
Okay. Finally, who's the sharpest tool in the shed? Danielle, Dolores, Jackie, Jennifer, A, Jennifer F., Margaret, Melissa, Rachel, or Teresa, the sharpest tool in the shed, you guys are giving to Dolores. All right.
Okay, good.
Okay, you both seem a little surprised.
Dolores. I love Dolores. Okay. I love Dolores. Okay. I mean, I don't know.
Okay, thank you.
And I love Dolores. She's one of my best friends.
All right.
I mean, obviously,
well,
I'm not insulting
her. She's going to be happy to see your reaction.
No,
And you just have to laugh it off if you're these people because you don't want to piss off your employers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or seem like a bad sport in front of the fans because they don't like that. They want you to, like, be fun.
Yeah. Well, it seems like in some ways the longevity of the franchise makes that harder because you know what people want from you and, like, there is a standard that has been set and... And yeah, like you can't be a bad sport. You can't be boring. Like that might be an even worse thing than being a bad sport.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
As fans with you.
That is very true. That is maybe the one unforgivable sin is to be boring.
Because you look at like a reality show that's like a phenomenon. You look at like Jersey Shore or something, the first season of that. And that was so great because these were like, totally just like new people who just were on TV and it was just actually watching real interactions unfold. And it was magical because they weren't trying to do anything but just like be whatever they were like actually naturally. And that's not something that you can manufacture. And like trying to is maybe like what starts getting you into trouble.
Yeah. And the thing is, we used to have that with The Housewives in season 1, 2, 3 of, you know, these different franchises. But now it's like everybody knows what it means to be a housewife.
Well, and also in those early seasons, are the housewives in a new city, like, do they actually ever know each other in real life or have they just been cast?
Some of them were really real friend groups.
Mm-hmm. Or even relatives.
Yeah. You know, related, yeah.
And the shows, so I feel like the benefit, like cost and benefit to, like, the longevity of the show is in the early seasons, maybe you're more guileless. Maybe you're not performing like an archetypal housewife role. But as they go on, they have these really, really long relationships that they can draw on. So any conflict has more meaning.
I think as the show goes on, like not to be like Sex and the City, New York is the fifth character. It's like, but the show is like a character now on all of these franchises where like a lot of the fights are about the show and things that happen off camera or some, you know, somebody said this on camera and they weren't supposed to because we made an agreement, you know, Fox Force 5 that we weren't going to talk about that. That definitely means nothing to you, but the girls will get it, we'll get it. So I do think it's sort of to circle back to the show being a character and also Andy's role, because I think your piece does such an interesting job of interrogating his role in the Bravosphere as like deity, but also, you know,
on the
marionette
ground.
Man, like playing the strings and being, you know, the boss, like daddy, but also don't cross me.
I mean, he is kind of the unifying force. He doesn't produce all the shows. He produces Housewives and he produces Ultimate Girls Trip, which is the All Stars Housewife franchise. But all the cast members, like from Below Deck to Married to Medicine, all come on Watch What Happens Live. A lot of shows have reunions that he hosts. Mm-hmm. He is the center of the world, and he doesn't set the narrative, you know, necessarily. Like, that's the edit. That's what actually happens with the people. But the conversation that fans are having, he's facilitating that. He's asking the questions. He's running the polls. Mm-hmm. He's helps us make sense of it. Or sometimes he follows fans when they're going a certain way. You know, like, people really went after
Rachel.
Rachel.
What the poll? Okay. Vote in our first poll. It is, whose behavior is more despicable, Tom or Raquel? What do you think? Who are you more upset with?
Well, Tom, because he was...
Yes. Yeah. Okay, and the audience is two. That's a landslide.
And it's like sometimes, you know, when you have a role like that, when you are the boss, when you are the father figure, it's like when you are an executive producer on some of these shows, like when do you step in and say like, all right, guys, like we all like these shows, we're all having fun.
But this is a person.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess and I know that he can do that. I've seen him do that, you know, when there are serious issues. He's brought up with anti-Semitism, with homophobia. But sometimes these things can become life and death. It really impacts them.
still watching. We'll be back in just a moment. And when we return, more on The Real Housewives with journalist Anna Peel.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Larson, the reviews director of Pitchfork, and this podcast is supported by Pitchfork Music Festival. Pitchfork Music Festival will take place July 19th through the 21st at Union Park in Chicago, Illinois. This year's lineup features Jamie XX, Alanis Morissette, Black Pumas, Carly Rae Jepsen, Brittany Howard, J. Paul, Muna, Jesse Ware, 100 Gex, and many more. The festival also features diverse vendors as well as specialty record, poster, and craft fairs, and works to support local businesses while promoting the Chicago arts and food communities as a whole. For more information on tickets and lineup, visit pitchforkmusicfestival.com.
I want to be in a happy place, too. But I also want to be in an authentic place. I want us to be able to tell the truth, Ramona, to each other, if we're going to be good girlfriends.
I want to have fun right now, okay? I had a really hard week.
That's your privilege. This is the white female fragility, Ramona.
You're preaching me.
I'm not.
You are.
That's gaslighting.
You know what? I'm not gaslighting
yes,
you.
Yes, you are.
You're gaslighting me.
Please,
I invited you into my home.
That I want to have a real friendship with you,
fine.
Ramona, because I like you.
I like you, too, but you
But
know
you can't like me only when I say the things you want me to say.
You can say whatever you want. I just said, don't. I don't want to talk.
And I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking.
I don't want to talk about race, religion, or creed. Is that okay? Creed.
Ramona, that's who I am.
Well, then you know what? You need to back off a little.
There's also Ebony, who has is the focal point of a long portion of your article also. The show Real Housewives of New York had never had a housewife of color never had a black housewife?
Never had a black housewife.
It had never had a black housewife. She was cast on the show. And, you know, ostensibly that's to, like, have a different kind of point of view.
Yeah, it's
and, like,
New York. There should be.
Exactly.
It's New York. It's literally, like,
weirdly, black people live in New York. Right.
Not just blonde women on the Upper East Side. I think that goes to a question that I have in that, you know, some of these women, and it's really some of the responses, some of the most shocking things in your article were the responses from the housewives that you reach out to, Ramona, who just simply loved to repeat the before, like lots of typos in her responses. But that goes to show that, you know, she's one of the longest standing, you know, OGs of one of the biggest franchises.
She was on the first season.
Mm-hmm. First season of Real Housewives of New York from the very beginning. And not to say that she's protected for her bad behavior, which got so bad that I think people sort of called for her to leave. But there seemed to be sort of a moat, like a castle, like protecting her mm-hmm. and some other housewives of her status, maybe a Luann, maybe a Sonia, even when they are sort of clearly acting out and have made
and crossing a line over and over and over.
Over and over and over again with sort of no, it seems, possibility to learn from their actions.
Well, I think it was really interesting because I had seen, you know, her fights with Ebony, which were
on camera.
Yeah, disturbing enough. Mm-hmm. The kind of cluelessness about race that was coming.
Did it seem like put on for?
No, it really felt really. That's the thing. It really did feel really authentic to who she was. And she also, and this was part of the article, she was like, I refuse to talk about this on camera. Like, I don't want to engage in race. And then she would continue to do like very, I'll say, microaggressions. Mm-hmm. That's sort of the nicest way to put it against Ebony, which you could argue there might be more than micro. There might be macro, but
calling, you know, Madam C.J. Walker, who she called E.J. Walker, a black chick. You know, it's just stuff like that all the time and kind of malignant cluelessness, I think. But seeing that and, like, then having the backdrop of what that was doing to members of production and how it impacted them and the stuff that we didn't see.
Mm-hmm. And not just Ebony.
Yeah.
Just Ebony, but the black female producer, Darian Edmondson. Mm-hmm.
But I will say to that, which brings us sort of to New Roni, is that it did end up getting to a point that it was not fun for anyone, to the point where they wiped that whole slate clean. And they were like, this version of this show no longer serves the audience. And I do think it's sort of unfair. I actually interviewed Ebony before the season began.
Yeah, I remember. I edited that story.
You
did. Did she give the impression that she knew what she was walking into? Or that she felt like she knew what she was walking into?
She gave the impression that she's very bright, very smart, you know, a lawyer, like, great head on her shoulders and whatnot. I think she thought she could be in control of her own narrative and, you know, would, you know, be doing this thing that's really important, because it's important to have, you know, a black housewife on Real Housewives of New York if we haven't had it in 12 seasons. Mm-hmm. But I think she was thrown for a loop ultimately, and that she wasn't actually as prepared for what she was walking into in terms of who has power and who doesn't have power in this sort of ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And I do think it was necessary to sort of wipe the slate clean because the show was not what it used to be and maybe wasn't as fun as it used to be. It does sort of look like to the audience, oh, we bring in a Black cast member and now we have to scrap the whole thing, which mm-hmm. is unfair to Ebony and
yeah.
kind of hard to sort of grapple with.
Well, that's what finding out what was going on behind the scenes sort of justified all of the things that Ebony was talking about on camera that some fans punished her for. Mm-hmm. It's like the need to have those conversations. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It was really, it's like a lot of this stuff, right? Like it was in front of us the whole time. We've seen them drinking the whole time. We've mm-hmm. seen Ramona like interact with
service people, yes. yeah, service oh, workers yeah. and hotel staff in the craziest ways.
Yeah, and like we knew it, we saw it, and it. But it, I don't know what we do next with this information. Mm-hmm. I hope it's a matter of looking at our appetite for this gladiatorial conflict and thinking about the cost to those people. Mm-hmm. But then I hope it's also changing the way that they're made so that mm-hmm. there are some...
Well, yeah, that's a good segue. So, mm-hmm. like, how has Bravo responded?
So, while we were speaking with them about the story, they released a new set of guidance for their production partners. Mm-hmm. So, Bravo distributes the shows on cable and, you know, and through Peacock. Different shows are made by different production companies. Mm-hmm. Shed, which produces Roni, Salt Lake City, Ultimate Girls Trip, is owned by Warner Brothers. Mm-hmm. Other companies are owned by different people. So they released new guidance, one of which was to avoid a situation like the one Ramona wound up being in, where there were multiple investigations into alleged racial hostility and racist language. Mm-hmm. And so now there's a daily reporting system. So every single day, the production company has to go to NBC Universal and, you know, say that it was an incident-free day or if okay. anything happened.
Is that uh-huh. separate from the hot sheets or is that?
So the hot sheets just document what happens on camera. Mm-hmm. So it's just very, very granular detail so that everybody can read through and know what the plot lines are before they have edits of the shows.
Cool.
Another thing that's in place is now there are going to be more alcohol, guidance around alcohol. Mm-hmm. So now they're supposed to be looking at how much people are drinking and making sure people don't get too intoxicated.
They're going to cut people off at, they say maybe?
They say maybe. Yeah. I mean, I'd love to hear more specific guidance, but that's different from the former policy, which was these are adults. No one's making them drink. If they ask for alcohol, mm-hmm. we give them alcohol.
Yeah.
They can do what they want. Mm-hmm. But if somebody, you know, my feeling is if somebody's drunk enough to be described on a hot sheet as drunk, it's like uh-huh. they know that this person's intoxicated. Or if uh-huh. Andy Cohen calls someone drunk, though he called Meredith Marks drunk on Watch What Happens Live, it's like uh-huh. we can see that. So if yeah. they know that, then, you know, what's the line for when do you stop filming with that person?
It's tricky. And I guess I'm going to go back to my big question of can we ethically consume this thing that I have been consuming since I was 15.
I feel like you also asked when Jen Shah got arrested
yeah.
for...
I did. I wrote a big piece.
For
like,
what, defrauding old people?
Defrauding old people. But to be fair about that, she'd been doing that for many years
before she became a housewife. Okay.
So that's sort of a Jen thing. But it was a big storyline. And it's one of those things where... And I have these conversations with my friends all the time because it is such an important part of culture. And arguably, if we're looking at, you know, Strike City in Hollywood, it's one of the only places in the entertainment industry that is like growing and growing and growing and getting bigger and bigger. Mm-hmm. Reality TV and specifically.
How many Housewives franchises are there?
10 including wow. Ultimate Girls Trip.
That's wild.
That is wild.
That's so much content.
I know, and I've watched a lot of it.
How many years of my life.
Woo, can't think about that. But is there a way for us to enjoy these women and these shows that have given us so much joy and also a lot of pathos? I've laughed, I've cried
yeah.
watching these women who are sharing themselves, who are, again, they are willingly doing it. No one's, you know, putting a gun to their head and forcing them to go on camera.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
so what do you think?
I think it's A, knowing that things are safe behind the scenes. I think that's really important. But I think ethical consumption is how we talk about it, mm-hmm. how we respond to it, you know, not calling Rachel Levis a whore, mm-hmm. but not piling on when she's clearly struggling, when she's taken herself out and yeah. has, you know, checked into yeah. a mental health facility. Thinking about Leah McSweeney's story and just looking at it with compassion. And instead of being like, you signed up for this, like mm-hmm. understanding that people feel pressure in these situations to perform, to stay, to not let their castmates down, to not mm-hmm. let producers down, to not let fans down. Mm-hmm. They, you know, and there's a financial component. If you leave, like, you're not going to get paid for the show. It's so hard. And there's so much going on. And to just, like, think about that instead of, like, they're characters, but we just have to remember that they're people. Mm-hmm. They're people.
Yeah. Well, and
but then I guess the other question is, if there is a more ethical version of Housewives, are you still watching it?
I think that there are shows that I don't know everything, but mm-hmm. like when I watch Married to Medicine, mm-hmm. it seems like it's a supportive. That's made by Purveyors of Pop, which is an independently owned production company. You know, I don't know, but from mm-hmm. what I see, mm-hmm. like this seems to be a close-knit group of respectful people. It's like I know yeah. some of them are doctors, and you know, so it's like it's kind
it's
of a different.
Yeah, it's yeah. a little bit different, but still.
But even just the way they're treated, but there is a reunion of Married to Medicine, and sometimes like just contrasting it with the reunion of Vanderpump Rules, where you know, because the reunion is the moment of reckoning. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. the, you know, you're reconciling everything that
happened.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and you're answering for your sins, and you have to respond, and you know, you have to defend yourself, or you have to, like, you know, fight it out.
Yeah, or mm-hmm. apologize.
Yeah, but this Vanderpump finale, it just felt like it was there to have everybody scream at mm-hmm. Rachel
one
and
woman.
Tom
yeah.
Sandoval.
Yeah.
And it wasn't fun. It felt cruel.
Yeah.
And then, like, contrasting it's that.
It is, like, gladiatorial.
Yeah. yeah. And then watching Married to Medicine, where there was a couple that broke up, and literally they reconciled during the reunion because everyone was like, okay, these are human beings. We're making a TV show, but, like, these are
a real
people.
Relationship. Yeah.
yeah. And, frankly, it's like they're putting, like, humanity above entertainment, and it wound up making the most entertaining show ever. It was the mm-hmm. best reunion I've ever seen. Mm.
But yeah, so if some of the franchises are like that, why couldn't they all be?
Great question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Still Watching, we'll be back in just a moment. And when we return, more on The Real Housewives with journalist Anna Peel.
Hi, I'm Michael Calori, the co-host of Wired's Gadget Lab.
And I'm Lauren Good, the other co-host of Wired's Gadget Lab. Get ready to dive deep into the cultural phenomenon that's been shaping conversations, sparking movements, and breaking barriers for over a decade.
The new three-part docuseries, Black Twitter, A People's History, based on the groundbreaking Wired cover story by Jason Parham, explores everything from the fun, games, and inside jokes that characterize the early years of Black Twitter to the social movements, the voices, and the hashtags that made Black Twitter an influential force in nearly every aspect of American political culture. Join us as we unravel the threads of this digital community, tracing its origins, celebrating its triumphs, and exploring its impact on society at large.
Watch the series from Onyx Collective in association with Wired Studios, premiering on Hulu on May 9th.
What do you think of the state of Bravo, like, right now? We're at sort of an interesting time because Beverly Hills is coming back. There's a whole storyline that's playing out in the news right now with Kyle Mauricio's relationship. Potomac is coming back, one of my personal favorites. Yes. I used to recap it for Vulture. and there has a big, like, relationship imploding with Robin Dixon and her husband. And Salt Lake City is still happening, and in a post-gen world, and New York City just sort of
you
wrapped
know
up.
So much.
I do. I really do. It's really actually crazy. And I think
I feel like I just, like, asked Rain Man to, like,
and I could go back 15 years too. But it feels like we're at an interesting point where there was sort of a lull this summer where shows weren't really hitting the way
Atlanta.
Atlanta, sort of not a great season for them. Where do you think we are right now with the franchise?
Well, I think, I mean, Miami last season was incredible.
Amazing.
I think Salt Lake City is having a great season.
Yes.
I'm really excited for Potomac. But like Ultimate Girls Trip, it makes me nervous. The next two that are supposed to come out.
New York
with Ramona. Like, it's like, I don't know if I want to, like, after everything we know, like, how do you just want to watch that person, like, have fun and go on a vacation? Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Morocco, which.
With Brandi Glanville and Karen Manzo.
And it's like, how are they going to, how can we have fun watching these? Can they air them?
Yeah.
They're talking about it, too. But there are also these other, like, Family Karma,
yeah.
Married to Medicine. Like, there are shows that are really vital and wonderful. And, you know, Real Housewives of New York is new. Mm-hmm. It always takes a show a minute to get its footing.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I don't know what happens with Atlanta. I don't, like, it feels like we are at an inflection point. And I hope that, maybe this sounds like overly optimistic or naive or something, but, like, I feel like we can look at where we are and we can go toward the light a little bit, and we can have fun and we can have good shows. And like, if it's not serving some franchises, like, you know, it's like we can let it go.
I guess that brings me also to a point, and again, I don't want to sound like a an apologist for Bravo, but it's like the authenticity thing is so important for these shows. And authentically, like, you know, Leah McSweeney was going for, that was her in some ways, her authentic journey, right? Her struggle with, you know, with drinking. And, you know, we're seeing that with a bunch of different people. Again, it's like, it is kind of real, but it also is kind of fake because it's produced. And where do we draw the line there? Because we want these women to sort of show themselves, but that's not always going to be pretty or PC all the time.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right. But I think it's like, how do you respond to that? Because, so, you know, there's the famous Bravo wink where it's like they'll have a cut or they'll have like music, and it just lets you know how to feel as a viewer. And so I feel like there are ways where they have to edit it and like help shape it so it's like, okay, that's not okay.
Yeah.
You know, like it's a little intervention, or, you know, sometimes not everything needs to be
on camera. No, that's fair.
Yeah. And it's like they did cut people vomiting. They cut people, you know, people urinating. It's like they have cut stuff because they're like, okay, this is too far. We don't like this. And so it's like they do know that there are lines. It's just like, what are the lines?
Yeah. And you can't anticipate every single like eventuality, but you can set some like clearer rules about like what is and is not acceptable, I guess. Yeah.
And they have a nightly talk show. You can talk about this stuff afterward and you can be like, that wasn't okay. Not everything, you know, one of the things that keeps coming up is like, this is a comedy, you know?
I was just about to ask you about that.
Yeah. So it's like things are being treated with the same amount of levity or the same tone, whether it's like, you know, racism or like it's really serious stuff or alcoholism. Mm-hmm. As like, you know, arguments over whether there was a cheese board at a part, you know, it's like not everything is the same volume, not everything is the same weight. And like, even if it's a comedy, there can be serious moments. And I think that viewers really respond to that. And I think we can have these real moments of pathos, like you were saying, that we want that. We want to like connect with these people. We know them. We've known them for years, so many of them. And like some of them, we're not always rooting for, but like, you know.
A lot of them we are rooting for.
Yeah.
We do love them and their flawed selves, too. Oh, my gosh. Wow, Anna. Wow, thank you so much for coming and chatting with us. Last question. Are you going to keep watching?
Yeah. I stopped for, like, when I was reporting, I got too depressed to watch for a few months.
That is so fair.
But, you know, I had to check out the new Roni, and then the trailer for Salt Lake
before
was
you
so
know
good.
It's right back in.
I'm back in.
I'm sure you've thought a lot about this, but do you have a Housewives tagline?
Oh my god, no, I don't. Okay. I'm sorry.
I'm putting you on the spot. I'm sorry, Chris. I feel like you must have like six.
You know what? Mine, and this is problematic, but it goes with your article. I think in college, I came up with one where it's like, I don't always finish a meal, but I finish a drink. And that's really sort of exactly in keeping with the whole problem. So that's it for this bombshell episode of Still Watching. Please send us your questions, your thoughts, your favorite housewives, your least favorite housewives. Email us at stillwatchingpod@gmail.com or find me on social media at Christress.
You can find me at Hillabuster with two R's.
This has been Still Watching from Vanity Fair. Our producer is Emily Elias, and we had production help from Peyton Hayes. We had technical assistance from Jake Loomis. Stephen Valentino is our executive producer. Our theme music is by Alexis Quadrado. We'll be back next week and introducing you to our next series that we'll be watching. Looking forward to seeing you then.
We've all been there before. You're planning a dinner party, or having family over, or even just cooking for yourself, when all of a sudden it starts to feel overwhelming.
I live in a very small one-bedroom apartment with a very small kitchen.
I can't figure out what to serve besides water soup at this point.
I'm Chris Morocco, food director of Bon Appetit and Epicurious, and this is Dinner SOS, a new podcast from Bon Appetit. Maybe it's a last-minute party with no menu inspiration. A kitchen with no space. A toddler who will only eat buttered pasta. Name your dinner emergency. We're here to help. Here's how the show works. On each episode, we'll take a call from a home cook facing a real dinner emergency. Then I'll work with one of our editors or someone from our amazing test kitchen to try and solve it. Because cooking for the people you love should inspire joy without a side of stress. Make sure you're following Dinner SOS wherever you're listening now.